Latin parties going on all over the world every weekend. Open Streamlabs has been running for 5 years now. It started in 2004 in London, and it's shown wildly successful growth, which is still continuing. We've now got 108,000 people registered with OpenStreetMap, and of those people, about 15,000 have contributed data. So this is a project on a huge scale, and it's got a huge international presence as well. And here's the kind of things that you get. Here's the map of Oslo, for example. So this is showing some of the outputs. And we can put in all kinds of different things here. As we zoom in closer, we can see more and more details from the parks and paths across the parks to the standard things you'd expect to see on a map, like roads and so on. But one of the key features of OpenStreetMap is that there's no fixed list of things that people can put in. And the technical term for that is there's no ontology. So the volunteers who are putting in the data can choose what features they want to add. It's completely free-form, so you can see people here have added things including toilets and hospitals, pubs and restaurants, cinemas, theatres, and there's no limit to what people can put in. So that's an introduction to OpenStreetMap, the free data project, but this talk is slightly different. This is the technologies behind OpenStreetMap, because as well as the 100,000 volunteers we have for the contributors, we have a much smaller but equally important team of people developing new technologies, open source technologies that we use in order to make this project work. So it's a bit like Wikipedia is a project to write an encyclopedia, and the Media Wiki project is the technology that powers Wikipedia. So we have our own technology team, and that's what I'm going to talk about here. So we're going to discuss a bit about the editing, the API and how that works, how you can get the data and use the data for your own project, how to create maps, known as rendering maps, and run through an example at the end of it. So this is the OpenStreetMap front page, dominated of course by a map. It's quite handy, but the key part to this is the edit link at the top. Stop here. This is where you can straight away, like Wikipedia, just go in and edit a map. And this is Potlatch, which is our Flash-based online editor, written in AS1, and if any Flash developers are here, you'll know how painful AS1 is. We're hoping that the new forthcoming rewrite will be in something slightly more sane. Now, there's other editors as well. There's JOSM, which is a Java offline-based editor. Mercator is a Qt-based editor. There's editors for mobile phones as well. But this is the first editor that most people see. And the way it functions is fairly straightforward. You add features to it by drawing on the map. In many areas of the world, we've got aerial imagery, courtesy of Yahoo, which makes it a lot easier to trace over roads, but you can use GPS traces and so on as your background data. And so you can simply click to add a point or an OpenStreetMap parlance, that's a node. You connect the dots together to form a weight, and these are the building blocks for all the geographic data. Now the way that we describe one feature being different from another is using tags. These are freeform key value pairs, and then in combination they can describe every feature that's in OpenStreetMap. So here what I've been doing is adding the outline of a building. This is a hall of residence in Aberdeen in Scotland. And so I've clicked to create the outline, and then down here is where I've described what that represents. So these key value pairs, building equals yes, name equals north house, they're fairly self-explanatory as to what they are. And we use the same approach for roads. We describe that it's a road using the same key value pairs. And although there's preset lists in the editor, you can put anything you like because it's, like I said, there's no ontology, there's no fixed list of things that you can put in. Now the editors talk to the main database, over an XML protocol that was designed specifically for OpenStreetMap. That is made up of the fundamental feature types. So these points, these nodes, all have a latitude and longitude stored in WGS84, the coordinate system that you get from your GPS device. They all have an ID. The user who made the last edit to each of these is tracked when they did that. And then these freeform tags here, and you can see that by using the attributes, we can include anything we like in here. Ways are done very similarly, same kind of header with the node references to describe it. Now this is an ordered list, and this is how we give the ways direction, so that you can cope with one-way streets or anything else that's got directional. The order of these nodes is important and fixed. And you can see here, there's a residential road here in Oslo. UTF-8 data, all of our key value pairs are UTF-8 throughout. Now the third building block of the OpenStreetMap geodata is called relations. And these are very powerful, very complicated, not particularly often used. To give you a sense of scale, we have 335 million nodes, 29 million ways, but only 96,000 relations. And they're for advanced features that you can describe as either just points or ways. You can collect multiple streets together when you're talking about a long distance route. Or this example here is how to describe a building which has got a courtyard or a hole in the middle of it. It allows us to create complex geometries. So the API is based on Rails. The editor's XML on the wire, and then it comes to Rails. Why do we use Ruby on Rails? It's easy to write. I'm a pharmaceutical researcher by training. I'm a backstage theater technician by previous profession, which means this is a wonderful venue for me to be talking. But I can pick up Ruby on Rails. It allows most other people to pick up Ruby on Rails. And that's the most important point, is that developers are the most limited resource, as they are in most open source projects. But the fundamental reason why we use Ruby on Rails is because Steve Zee, the founder of OpenStreetMap, rewrote it from the initial Ruby to be Ruby on Rails, and so we're still going with that. Now we do have a few technical problems with running Rails. A lot of the API call is what's known as a map request, which is requesting all the geographic data in a certain bounding box, so a certain square area. And that doesn't use much of the Rails. It's basically taking a list of nodes and ways, serializing them to XML, and sending them out on the wire. But Rails isn't built to do that. And what happens is you end up building in-memory objects for 1,000 nodes and 1,000 ways, serializing them to XML, and you can't even serialize in a streaming fashion. You have to build up a document in memory and then stream that from memory out. So it uses up a lot of memory. And we find leaks somewhere in there, somewhere in the libxml2 Ruby bindings, around that, there's memory leaks. And neither us nor the libxml project have managed to nail where it is. So there's frequently discussions about rewriting the OpenStreetMap API into something more performant, some kind of streaming C Apache module or Linux V module. And whilst that might come, the bulk of the API is all the other features of the OpenStreetMap website. It's frequently said that most open source projects evolve to the point where the application can send email. And OpenStreetMap not only can send email, but has its own blogging engine built in as well. And there's no way we're going to recreate all that in C. It may be considered we shouldn't have written that in the first place, we should have done something else, but we've got it, and Ruby on Rails is a good place to keep it. So here's a server layout. For all this to work, it requires actually a really small number of machines, and this is all the machines that are run by the OpenStreetMap Foundation. On the left-hand side, you can see we've got a web front end that's basically dealing with the incoming requests and serving out static features like all the pictures and the style sheets and the JavaScripts that are required to run the website. There are three application servers. These are the ones running the Ruby on Rails applications. And it's mainly this memory issue of how much memory they take up is why we need the three machines. And they all talk directly to the one database. So the database, as well as talking through these application servers to the front end, this is the kind of editing. So the data's coming in and going out to the editors on this side. But we've got the different ways that you can use the data over to the right-hand side. So the data is read-only for these four applications, which is the tile server. This is the machine that creates the maps that you can actually see on the website. It goes out to your requires the search that's on the front page. OSMX API is another machine which provides a searchable read-only API. So it's not suitable for editing, but for many other purposes, it's more suitable. And then Dev is our all-purpose development and testing machine, which also hosts all the downloads that are available for the data. And then finally, Idris is the off-site virtual machine to run the wiki or Subversion repository track and mailing lists. And it's quite nice having that as being off-site. So that when everything else disappears, we can at least put stated messages up on the wiki. So the main nine machines there are held at University College London, graciously sponsored by them. So this is the CPU usage. I thought I'd put in some RRD graphs after our talks yesterday. So here's the median graph of the main DB. As you can see, it's pretty busy and a lot of disk I/O. And this has become a limiting factor, especially over the last 6 months, having this one machine responsible for all the data, all the databases, talking to everything else. But of course, as we say, the hardware is cheap, or at least reasonably cheap. So we bought a new machine to solve this problem. There was a fundraising drive 2 months ago in the OpenStreetMap community to raise £10,000 for a new server. We had that target in 2 days, and by the end of the week had £16,000 raised for it. And that was amazing how quickly we could raise that. But that's the size of the community. When you've got so many people available, a few pounds from each of them goes a long way. So this is a dual core machine with dual CPU quad core. It's got 32 gigs of RAM. It's got 1.6 terabytes of 15,000 RPM SATA disks or SAS disks. It's quite a nice machine. Now we've been running MySQL as the backend for OpenStreetMap for quite a while, and my normal approach of anybody can ask questions is going to be suspended for this slide and the next slide because it gets kind of tricky here. So whilst MySQL works, we've had some problems with it, and a lot of them are to do with server administration. So we change API versions, and when we do, we change table structures. And given that we not only store these 335 million nodes, but also every version of those nodes that there has ever been, and every version of every way and all the rest of it, some of our tables are really quite large. And if you change schema on MySQL tables, it does a table copy. So if you're just adding a new column, it copies all the data from the original store to the far store. And that can take out OpenStreetMap for days, just copying that across. So that's really the problem. Constraints can be deferred on MySQL. You can either have foreign key checking on or off. And when you turn it on, it doesn't check the contents of the table. So because Steve C isn't a professional coder either, there was no constraints put on the database several years ago when it got set up. And we want to change that now. And we've been having lots of problems with trying to do this in a timely fashion. If we leave the foreign keys turned on, then it will take several weeks to copy the data across because it checks the foreign key constraints every time. If we switch them off, it's much quicker, but then we've still got this table which has got some violations of authorities. And then there's some other minor things as well. It doesn't error if you try sending an invalid UTF-8 to a UTF-8 table, which makes it really hard to debug when you're trying to get rid of all the invalid UTF-8 in the database. Different features are available on different DB engines. Transactions, you need to be running NODB tables. Spatial extensions, which are special geographic types, they're only available by Python engines. And that kind of thing is just more grit in the wheels. And there's some non-standard SQL syntax, which gets very annoying when you've written a Ruby on Rails application and there are some bits of SQL that you need to write, because Ruby on Rails database abstraction only works for simple databases. When you start doing more complicated things, you always end up having to drop back to SQL. And so this was one of my projects, which was to try and abstract away all this, and I spent 4 days shouting at the computer trying to sort these things out. So we're going to move to Postgres for this new database. The reasons why, there's a couple minor reasons, which is we have experience with it elsewhere. We use Postgres for tile rendering, which is PostgreSQL with geospatial extensions. You can change schemas on large tables, adding a column without triggering table copies. And all the things on the MySQL slide that I put up are don't apply to Postgres. But mainly it's the personal preference for SysOps, and this is like the reason we use Ruby on Rails. It's not technical reasons, there's a lot more social reasons behind it. So our SysOps know, like, and have experience with Postgres, and that's the driving reason. Technical reasons are just from mailing list arguments, but this is the real reason why. So we're coming to a new version of the API, known as API 0.6. It's happening right now. OpenStreetMap was turned off 90 minutes ago for a weekend-long upgrade. It's been a year and a half since last year. So that means there's no live demonstrations from me today, because this is actually suspended. In the new version of the API, we have lots of Rails tests. I've had an engineer at CloudMate writing tests for about 6 months and finding all the corner cases and edge cases with UTF-8 compliance and all those kind of things. We're sorting out a few lingering correctness problems. We're creating this idea of change sets. Now, anybody who uses Subversion, and I'm guessing everybody here has used some kind of source control, once we've been versioning each node in each way, it's like versioning each word or each number. And what you want is a slightly more abstract way for a contributor to say what they've been doing here. So you can say, move this tram line through central Norway, through central Oslo, I should say, and then put a little message saying the reason I moved this is they've just finished rebuilding it outside the central station. So you can provide commit messages to the work that you've been doing. Works on the database to add the constraints and transactions. And the history tab is something that comes out of the change set work. So this is, again, it's not so useful having the history of the nodes and the ways, although we've been doing that. But it change sets grouping together lots of changes at the same time and supplying commit messages. We can look at a particular area and say who did what when in this area and why were they doing it. And this brings a, we in OpenStreetMap, one of the biggest sources of ideas about how to do this is of course Wikipedia, because it's a similar project that's worked very well. And the history tab there for each article is a great way of summarizing what the changes were and explaining why they're there. Now, we don't have individual documents, so we've constructed it to work on arbitrary areas instead. So this is the start of more anti-vandalism work for OpenStreetMap. Thankfully, there hasn't been much problem with vandalism. There's isolated cases, of course there are. It's too big a project otherwise. But we expect, as it becomes more popular and higher profile, that more and more places start using it, there will be more script kiddies coming in, messing things around. And so this is one of the key things to see where people were editing, how big an area were they editing over, what were they doing, is to bundle these up into change sets. So I would expect over the next year a lot of development will go around these, being able to revert individual change sets and visualizing them and things like that. So we've talked about getting the data into the database and all some technical stuff about how it works. How can you get the data from your own project? Well, there's four main ways. Planet dumps. We make all the geographic data available every week in one compressed 5.7 gigabyte XML file, or rather about 300 gigabytes when you uncompress it. And that contains everything. And so you can take all the geographic data, all the features, all the tags, everything else, and do what you like with it. We prevent diffs, which are more interesting, which is on a weekly, daily, hourly, and even minutely basis, an XML document that contains all the changes in that time period. So you literally can go in and download what happened in OpenStreetMap. Well, not last minute, because nothing happened in the previous minute because it's switched off, but normally every minute you can go in and say, give me a list of all the changes. And it is possible to roll them into a map. We run a live map server, minutely tile server, which every minute downloads the data, works out what's changed, works out which areas of the world have changed, and then redraws those areas. And that can all be done in less than a minute. And the main map on OpenStreetMap has been running this on an hourly basis for the last few months, quite successfully. There's an export tab, which comes on the next slide, and that allows you to have a look at just take a small area. This is where you're not interested on a global scale, you might only be interested in a small area. And you can download that either the raw XML or we provide facilities to download it as SVG files, or just all the map tiles stuck together, rendered just for that area. And then maybe you want to lie somewhere in between the global scale and a small scale, if you want to work on a country by country basis. A few different companies, mine is one of them, provides extracts in numbers of different formats. So if you're used to working with shape files, or you want a download for Garmin GPS or something like that, you can get them. Downloads to cloudnet.com as well. So a quick run through rendering here. How do you take the XML data and draw it effectively into these map tiles? And here's a look at the tool chain. You can take the planet file, convert it using a program that we developed called OSM to PGSQL, which takes that XML file, puts it into a PostGIS database, so it has lines and points and polygons available for drawing. Mapnik is the key part to this. This is the rendering engine which can take the geographic shapes and use a style sheet. It's an XML format, but it does the same kind of thing as a cascading style sheet to HTML. It allows you to specify the colors, the widths, what you want to show up, what scale you want things to show up at, and draw the output images. And finally, ModTile is an Apache module, again developed by John Burgess from the OpenStreetMap project. And that listens for unbound map requests, so your JavaScript client on the front page of OpenStreetMap or whichever client you're using will request a specific tile, a 256 by 256 pixel tile. Now, the system is fast enough that it can take that tile request, go and ask Mapnik for that. Mapnik will select the data from the PostGIS database, draw it to its buffer, send it back to ModTile, which will cache it, and also send the output to the client. That generally works in around a quarter of a second. So you don't need to pre-prepare your world maps, which is a good thing, because a world map, from looking at the whole world in one pixel all the way down to the highest zoom level, comes out as about 4 or 5 terabytes of disk space will be needed to hold all those map images. So it's much more feasible to wait for the requested area, draw it, send it back out. So here's an example of what you can do. I'm going to talk about OpenCycleMap because it's one of my projects. It was started 2 years ago to provide maps for cyclists, because cyclists have got a different view on life from general road users. No Lord Jesus cares about any of these signs that cyclists do. And cyclists also care about hills quite a lot as well. So it's nice to show that information. And that's what OpenCycleMap does. It uses OpenStreetMap data for all of its cycling data. There's no third-party data source. This is just what OpenStreetMap volunteers have been putting in, along with all the pubs and the restaurants and theatres that you've seen before. So here's a map of Oslo, and you can see these cycling routes are highlighted. Maybe you've never even seen these routes before, but the cyclists, you know where they are. And it shows colouring and contour lines. You can see, perhaps not so clearly on the screen, but up towards the top you can see the outlines of the hills and where they are. And here's, zooming in a bit, the icons that I've selected to show are different from the standard map, so things that might be more interest to cyclists. Bike parking is included, although not shown here. Roads which have cycle lanes marked down the sides of them. These cycle paths that you can cycle on are shown like that. So it's the same toolchain as I described a minute ago. It's not the only way to make a map. There are other ways of doing it. One of them is because you start with an XML file and you can make SVG, which is also an XML file, you can use XSLT to go from one to the other. But that's only for heroes to try and do. That's the most complex way of doing it possible, and extremely slow as well. So this uses the same mapping toolchain. It also gets all its height data from NASA's SRTM project. It's 10 years ago, I think it is now, there was a shuttle, a NASA shuttle mission, which took a radar on board and mapped the height of the planet, most of the planet at least. And they make this available public domain height data. And I can take that data, I can create contour lines from it, which are stored in the Postgis database. I can color the TIFFs, basically, to make colored rasters to give the hills different colors in the background. And they're all combined by MapMake and go out through Montana. Doing all that is quite a CPU-intensive process. I run it on an Amazon EC2 instance. And the biggest problem with doing that is that it uses a lot of disk I/O to take all the data from the database and all the TIFFs from the disk. If anybody's got any experience of using heavily I/O-bound programs on an EC2 instance, please come and let me know your experiences, because it's just a big problem. And then CPU is because we're re-rendering all the tiles across the world every week. It takes quite a while to do that. It's quite popular though. This is why I like using EC2, is because I get sponsorship for it and I don't have to pay for the bandwidth that this uses. The OpenStreetMap tile server, by comparison, uses about 7 or 8 times more traffic. So if you build a popular map website, you need to be prepared to handle this is coming up for 5 megabit per second constant, 24 hours a day. It's peaking up to 10 megabit. One of the little tricks that I came across here, some of you might have a graphic design background or have done similar things on Google Maps. If you try making semi-transparent routes, like these blue and these red highlights here, you can see through to what lies behind it on the map. You can do the same thing with Google Maps API, but you get this horrid overlapping problem of every time you draw another semi-transparent layer, it overlaps. And unfortunately, there's no easy way around this, except to draw each layer separately at full opacity, and then combine them afterwards. This is one of the advantages of doing the MapMic way of doing it, which you can't do with SVG, because unless anybody knows better and can help me out here, you can't draw a translucent SVG to a buffer, or rather you can't draw SVG to a buffer and then combine it translucently afterwards. You still get that overlap. And so that's the example of OpenCycleMap.org. But it's not just rendering that we can do. We can do all kinds of things with OpenStreetMap data. A few examples here. My favorite one is the Garmin unit here. which is my one garment unit. It's a proprietary format, but it's been reverse engineered by various people, MindStreetMap people included. We can now not only put the maps on the garment unit, but also reverse engineered their map styling, so we can make maps look however we want on the units, and the routing as well. So we can do full routing across it using turn restrictions that have been put into OpenStreetMap. That's why I quite like that. The one at the bottom is a recently launched site in the UK. Again, it's not an OpenStreetMap project, but it's people now using OpenStreetMap. These guys had originally built their site around collecting their own cycling information for one of the towns in England, Cambridge. But I'd realised that this just doesn't scale. They can't recreate OpenStreetMap, just the bits that they need for the whole country. So what they've done is switched over to using OpenStreetMap data in the background instead. And it's a journey planner for cyclists. So this is showing that there's more and more times now you'll come across OpenStreetMap data outside of the OpenStreetMap project. It's proving so successful and so popular that you get things elsewhere. So here's a bit about OpenStreetMap. This is our last development day, and this was when we were putting the finishing touches to the new API version. Maybe some of this has attracted your interest. We are a small group of engineers working on OpenStreetMap, and a lot of the stuff we do is just limited by our time. So we're always searching for new developers, as well as new contributors. Maybe this could be you next time eating pizza. If you do want to get involved from a development point of view, we have wiki pages, lists, we're on IRC, and of course we've got Track and SVN and everything else you would want to get along with. And I'll put in a quick advertisement for our State Map conference, which is this year is in Amsterdam in July. The picture here is of last year's conference in London. Great conferences, we end up having about a third of the people there are all speaking at one time or another, getting updates from all different chapters around the world. We had some guys who flew over from Japan who barely spoke a word of English between them and came into the presentation to let us know how they were getting on in Tokyo. It's a great conference, I can thoroughly recommend it. Now some of you might recognise the music because it was played at the start yesterday. This is the video that was supposed to be playing. Is the height data for the hills, but everything else is in there. It's not only open cycle map that's a customized one, although it's the one that I know the most about. We have customized maps for skiers. So openpistemap.org, if you go to ski resorts, it'll show you what grades the runs are, how many people you can carry on each lift, and all these other things, because each OpenStreetMap volunteer has their own idea about what's of interest to them, and they can put that data into OpenStreetMap. So all the cycling data you see, all the piste data, all the skiing data you might want, all the whitewater rafting data is another one, is all just put in by volunteers using the same tools. We can make routable maps for Garmin GPS devices because the file format has been reverse engineered. So that's proof of concept that the data is there and it can be done. So you can make your own. There are some open source routing engines which can take the OpenStreetMap data, convert it into an intermediary file format which is more suitable for routing, and then you can run algorithms on it, A*STAR or JXPILS or any other algorithm. So yes, you can. Absolutely. The only thing to be aware of is that there aren't many tools that have taken into account turn restrictions. So no left turn, no right turn, everything must turn right except for buses and trams. So although OpenStreetMap volunteers can put this information in, not much of it is there yet. It's a new thing and it's only coming up. And it's a bit like the cycle data for OpenCycleMap. One of the key things with OpenStreetMap is that the volunteers will put data in when it's being used. So I started to render OpenCycleMap 2 years ago in July, and there was very little cycling data, but immediately the people could see the effect of marking where you could park your bike. They start putting in bike parking areas. And when you get your applications into the hands of users, they can start to see that, hang on, this isn't taking into account turn restrictions, but if I put it in, it works. Then all of a sudden that data starts appearing and the contributors start doing that.
Sure. What about safety? So when I'm out driving, I want to revise or just add information to the data sets. Is there some existing mechanism to do that online already? So an online data set and then sync that back with
Yes, that's how some of the editors work. They work locally and sync back. The main editor is like a live editor, but other ones work offline. One of the features of the new API, which you'll have missed, we're deploying right now as we speak, so OpenStreetMap's not working, is the version number of each object in the database is exposed through the API. And that is something we're doing in order to facilitate this kind of offline editing, because there might be a large time lag between when you've acquired the data and when you're sending it back to the API. So this will minimize the chances of changes in between conflicting. So it is possible. The problem that you have is you need to start carrying around huge amounts of data with you. As I said earlier, it's 5.7 gigabytes compressed is all the geographic data. So maybe your sat-nav needs to only be editable in one country at a time, or have quite a fast 3G connection to download all the data.
I would like to download all that data once and then send it.
Sure. Every now and then. Yeah. Well, the diffs are published, as you see in the video, to do it.
Was Christiania, and we are not having zero.
So the question is about putting historical mapping data into OpenStreetMap and keeping the current data as well as future changes. So I'll say that the main focus is clearly on the space vector, that's site-based. But thankfully we are mapping the world at a quick enough rate that we're going to get a fairly consistent time snap of the world anyway. There are a few minor projects involving changes through time. People marking construction sites with what they're going to be when they're finished being constructed. Or now we're finding that the project has been going long enough that you can find some pubs and shops on their closed compared to what's been there. But there's no concerted effort to make fully historical maps at the moment. There are certain places, especially places like Oslo and in London, where people want to take historical data and put it into OpenStreetMap as well. But the problem there is simply we don't have a mechanism for controlling what's visible in the editors. So all the editors would just show everything all at once, and it would be a confusing nightmare for the contributors of trying to figure out which roads are the roads that are here now compared to the roads that are there before. So personally, I would think that that's going to happen. It will be incorporated into OpenStreetMap. There are some very minor side projects, but there's nothing concrete about it yet.
Okay, I think we might have to stop there. I'm certain they will ask your questions afterwards.
Sure.
So thank you for a very fascinating
talk. Thanks for watching.